Hello, I'm Quincy Macon, a student at the University of Memphis and a proud intern here at WYXR 91.7 FM. I'm excited to welcome you to Meeting in the Middle 2025, a collaborative initiative for students and professionals. At WYXR, we don't just play the music that matters to Memphis. We work to support the people behind it. That includes students, emerging artists, and young creatives like me who are dreaming of building a future in music, media, and entertainment. This event is part of our continued effort to bring those dreams a little closer to reality. Recorded live on campus at the University of Memphis, this year's Meeting in the Middle features two panel discussions designed to open doors, share knowledge, and connect young Memphians with the people already doing the work. On stage, in studios, behind the boards, and in boardrooms. Meeting in the Middle was made possible with support from Arts Memphis, Tennessee Arts Commission, Blue Tom Records, and the University of Memphis. I'm honored to guide you through this program as both the host and the student who's learning in real time. Our first panel is called Building a Music Career in Memphis. This conversation is all about taking that first step, figuring out how to move from passion to profession. Whether you're making beats in your dorm room, singing at open mics, or just starting to find your place in a creative world, this discussion is for you. You'll hear from four people who carved out their own paths right here in Memphis and beyond. Awana Mitchell, Robin Kendrick, Brent Logan, and Angela Blair. They each bring a unique view from performing and songwriting to visual branding and label work. WYXR's own Jerry J.B. Boyd leads the conversation, asking what it really takes to get noticed, stay consistent, and make a life in music without having to leave Memphis to do it. Let's jump
Hello,
in.
Hello, everybody. Hi. Welcome to Meeting in the Middle. Thank you. My name is Megan Christina.
And I'm Amaya Price.
And we are here to introduce y'all to what this is. So, Meeting in the Middle is a collaboration between WYXR, the University of Memphis, Arts Memphis, and the Tennessee Arts Commission, where we bring students, lovers of music, and industry professionals to come and to have a conversation about what it is to be making music in this space that we're in.
So this event is also paired with Blue Tom Records. And if you don't know what Blue Tom Records is, we are the student-ran record label outside of the University of Memphis that focuses on the curation and elevation of student talent. If you don't know, some of our alumni are Kid Maestro, the band Camino, and Alexis Dade. So we're going to go ahead and pass it over to Jared to introduce our panelists.
Give them a hand. Make some noise for them. I want to send a special shout out to all the students that have been involved with music business, music industry here at the University of Memphis, and particularly everyone at Blue Tom Records for providing so much support for this event. We're very, very busy this season at WYXR, and so considering that, these students have really stepped up and made us feel welcome in their home. But also, I want to Thank again our sponsors and all of our staff at WYXR. And thank y'all for being here, because I can already feel the... First of all, I had never seen any of these events kick off with a resounding applause and everybody's excited and everyone's ready to encourage each other. So there's already better energy than the last few that we've done. This is the fourth annual, so I'm excited for today, and I'm excited to hear more from these guests. We have some amazing guests. The point of this was to show... Synergy between the University of Memphis and our station. If y'all don't know, WYXR is effectively the station affiliated with the University of Memphis. So if you haven't been to Crosstown Concourse to come see us, please do. A lot of the Blue Tom students in past years have been interns. Megan and Canale are interns currently. And they put a lot of work into this. So thank you for supporting them. Thank you for supporting us. And we'd love to work with you, those of you who are students. So those of you who aren't students, we still would love to meet you. We still would love to facilitate having a place that you feel is home. The station with the city soul is what we call it. But when we say that, we aren't just talking about soul music. We're talking about the heart of the city, not just the things that have happened in the past, but supporting and elevating what's coming down in the future. So y'all believe in that? Yeah, that part. We're going to have some fun today. What I love to do when I'm anywhere, when I have guests, is to allow my guests to introduce themselves. So I'm going to go ahead and make that happen now if we want to go down the line and get in this first panel. Y'all ready?
Hi, everyone. My name is Anna Mitchell Bean. I co-own Royal Studios with my brother, Boo Mitchell. I manage artists. I tour management, event production, all of those things, in the industry, as everything behind the scenes and everything that the artist does not want to do is what I do.
Hey, everyone. My name is Logan. I work for Memfo Presents. I do talent buying, marketing manager, street team coordinator, social media manager, artist relations, event production, wear a lot of hats, deal with a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff. Basically don't like stepping out in front of the camera too much. I like to let the artist shine. I handle everything back of house and leading up to the event to make it happen and sell a lot of tickets.
Hi, everyone. How are you? My name is Angela Blair, and I work for a company called Made in Memphis Entertainment, also known as MIME, and we are a full-service entertainment company, and we have various services for creatives in recording, sync, publishing, rights management. But I particularly focus on the artist development side, Adaptive Music, which is our development company on the business side of things. So we focus on making sure that creatives, their music business is in order versus focusing on the glitz and glam, the creative side. That's just a little bit about it. And I also work on our distribution side. It's an artist empowerment company with distribution called Beatroot. And I've been with the company now for 5 years, but outside of that, I'm a creative myself. I'm an artist, and I've been on this journey now for a little bit over 10 years. So thank you for having me.
What's up? Hi. What's up, y'all? Hey, I'm not from here, so y'all got to show me some love. I'm from New Orleans. My name is Wazam. So yeah, I'm Robin Nicole, the inspiration specialist, and I'm wired to inspire you to live your authentic purpose through music. I'm a 20-plus year music veteran, and I started out as a songwriter, which I still songwrite. Real, he'll be here on the next panel. He has a pull-up tomorrow event, and I'll be playing some of my music because I typically don't because I'm on the business side. But I have a company called Track That Sync. And I do sync licensing now. I transition. So one of the things I try to help a lot of young artists do is learn how to cultivate both a life in the creative space and how to use that to get money on the back end, which is completely separate, but you could do it at the same time. By the way, you guys heard of Survival of the Thickest?
Yes,
I have two on there tonight, y'all. So check it out. It dropped today. So I'll tell y'all about all of that.
Make some noise for that.
So yeah, there you go.
I kind of want to start down at the end of the table because we have two people who are kind of on both sides of the conversation that we're having today, and kind of jump into, if we can, what the building blocks of an artistic career should be in 2025 in today's climate as media grows and evolves and changes so rapidly. You know, what are some of the things that y'all see that you wish artists knew when they come in, looking for guidance, looking for help, and some of the things that people might be missing? And tell us a bit more about your journey navigating being both on the artist side, but also being support for artists.
Oh, that's a really good question. So my answers are typically unorthodox. I'm just going to warn y'all, but it lands, right? The first thing I would tell anybody, and Angela could attest to this, you can too, Jay, I know you can too. A lot of people are not authentic. I can tell you about how to get an IPI number and do all these other basic things you need to do to get into it, but your authenticity is what you need to always keep the same. That is we're talking about building blocks, right? I would say that is the foundation. You build on that. Before you get to any brass tags, before you get to anything, I have been all over the world doing something with music in some type of capacity. I was a manager. I was in Germany. I was doing people. It's so much stuff I've done. That is the thing that always creates the lifelong fans or the stands, as you say. That is the thing that even when the artists themselves change, but they still know who they are at their core, they still keep thriving in what they do. Okay? So the first building block is foundation. I'll just say two. The second one I would say is you just have to be a student of life. You can't be lazy. I don't really have a cheat code. You just can't be lazy. You know what I'm saying? Because I find, you know, and in your defense, because we grew up in different generations, right? But because we had to grow up with the streetlights, we did not have the benefit of getting things very quickly online where y'all can just upload. We had to track stuff out. We had to do, it was a completely different thing, right? That's why I say in your defense. Because a lot of times, just because of how you are wired now in this generation, you just get everything quickly. That does not mean that you can't get it or you're wrong for thinking that way. I'm always defending y'all because a lot of older people, they don't get it. I'm like, it's not their fault. That's what they know. Just like we knew how to take it slow, we slow pokes to y'all and y'all too fast to us. You get what I'm saying? So a lot of what is super important for you guys to understand is that if you build on your authenticity and you commit to just not being lazy and doing the work, you're going to land. You are going to land. I can promise you that. So that's why I said unorthodox in terms of these are core things about your personhood that you need to have if you're going to be in this industry. You got to have that. Because if you're lazy and you get offended easily, it's not gonna work. Because the minute somebody don't like your song, it's not a bop, you mad, you crying, you already lazy too, you're not gonna go far. Because now your feelings hurt and you already didn't want to work anyway. I'm just keeping it a buck. What you got, Ange?
I was gonna say, ask yourself the question, like, is this something you really want to do? Because a lot of people, they are out there and it's more so of like a hobby. Or is something that's trendy or that's popular right now, like you just want the fame. I think you really need to really connect with yourself and just your inner being of why is it that you're really doing this, because it's so much bigger than the music. So make sure you really tap into that. And then also just touching back on not being lazy. It's hard work. Like a lot of people, they come into the industry again for the fame. They think everything is the glitz and glam, it's sexy. But you have to have your business in order, because if you don't, you will not succeed. So first and foremost, before even thinking about putting the music out, and it's okay to be creative, but just make sure you are about your business so that you can succeed in this industry if it's not a hobby and it's something that you really want to do for the rest of your life and make a sustainable living off of.
I'd say to piggyback off that from the event production side too, you're working like 16-hour days. You can't be lazy. You can't get your feelings hurt. You got to have thick skin. You got to keep pushing. And it can't be a hobby, the same thing, because you're going to be there all day dealing with all different types of people from all different walks of life that are raised all different ways. So you got to really be there. You got to be on time. You can't be late for anything. You can't have a bad attitude because you will not get another job. That's just how it is. You get weeded out really quickly.
Dave said everything. It's very important for you to know what you want to do and that this is what you want to do. And once you become the artist or put out your music or start this process of branding yourself, because you're going to have to brand yourself every day, all day, everything you do is about your brand. So I like what Angela was saying about you possibly, I'm sorry, my brain went south. I like what Angela was saying. You definitely have to make sure that this is what you want to do, because it's not what it seems like on the internet. I manage an artist by the name of Big Boogie. Some of you have probably heard of him. If this is what you want to do, the reason I picked Boogie to work with was because he was consistent. He was on point with every post, every this, every that. He built his fan base on not by bots, not by anything. Everything was organic because he drew the fans to him. So don't be like everybody else, but you have to brand yourself and stay branding yourself. And that's, branding is your job. You're an artist second, but branding is your job, because what people see you put out to the world is how they're going to perceive you.
So. I wanted to ask you a specific question. Anyone else can weigh in. Considering that you do work so closely with Big Boogie, But your family's heritage is rooted in the legacy of a lot of well-known artists from the Memphis area who have recorded here. And I can let you elaborate on those names, because if I start to say some of them, we might be up in here singing and having church. But I want to ask, what responsibility do artists from Memphis have to pay reverence to the music that's come from the city in the past, to know it, to learn it, to respect it, and to broadcast it, to hold any of it as inspiration for what they do currently? Or do artists even have a responsibility to even wear the city on their sleeves or put the city on their back? Does that matter? Because you see other cities that don't necessarily own a particular neighborhood or a particular sound or a particular legacy.
Well, I say this all the time. Memphis, we're abundant with talent. I can sub anybody anywhere I am in the world for a Memphis player. We just got it, and we got that from church. We was raised, this is the Bible Belt, we was raised in church. So you have another city that may have 5 bass players. We got 100, and I can sub them out at any time. Somebody can't come, okay, let me get this person. He may not have been as good as this person, but I need him right now because he going to keep it and it's going to stay along. So Memphis is a brand. And you don't have to particularly know about the artist that was.
Don't run down the legacy now. Go on, Royal Studios, yeah. We got to talk about it now. Folks in the room might not know now.
Well, okay, so we did, my grandfather did Al Green and Peoples, Ike and Tina Turner, Rod Stewart. The list goes on. If you go to Who Sampled and say, and pull up Willie Mitchell, it's going to pull up like 1,000 songs.
You see, they taking notes over there now. We're going to school tonight.
But as far as I feel like you don't have to, it's already in you. They don't have to particularly know. It's already in them. It's been seasoned in everybody that is doing music in Memphis. I don't care what genre you are. You still have a basic logistics of the Memphis sound, period. And it comes out. And whether it's an old soul record, I can see resemblance in old soul records versus now 2025 hip-hop records from Memphis. It's a sound that we have here that can't be duplicated. It's authentic. So, yeah, like, it's not that you know about it. You may not never heard of anybody that I've just talked about. But it's in you, so when you project out, you're projecting what I'm talking about.
Y'all have any other thoughts? Mempho does a lot of tributes each year.
And of course,
y'all are connected with David Porter's company, so I think that there's something to be shared from each of the panels.
Yeah, us with Mempho Presents, we do the Riverbeat Festival that took place of the old Beale Street Music Festival. We're doing Smoke Slam, which took place at the old Barbecue Fest. We do the Mempho Fest every fall. We're going on our 7th year of that. Started in 2017, that was the only thing that we did, and I didn't even work there. At that time, I was managing a club called Minglewood Hall, which some of y'all might have been to. My history is a little different. I'm from Chicago, moved down here on a whim in 2003, fell in love with Memphis. I managed the old Pop Tunes record shop downtown on Poplar and Danny Thomas, no longer there anymore. It's the first place I ever sell an Elvis record in the world. So tons of history, learned everything about Memphis history working at that place. Started street teaming for a now defunct promoter, being like, hey, do you need someone to put up posters for you? I'll do it for a free ticket. That's what I did. And every time they'd book a show, they'd call me, they'd give me a bunch of posters. I'd go all over town, put them up. I'd go to a show for free. And then I was like, hey, how are you guys collecting all this data back then? This is 2005, you know, before there was Facebook and MySpace was around back then. That's how old that was. But I would actually stand in line and collect emails from everyone at the door and, like, build a database and an email list and just really was grinding with them while I was running the record shop.
And then the record shop kind of was starting to slow down, and they were starting to ramp up. So I was like, hey, I want to be your marketing street team guy. How do I do that? And they interviewed me, and they're like, gave me a shot. Because I was always showing up. I was always working my butt off. I was putting in the long hours, you know, coming there sober, leaving sober. Very important things to do. And then I got that gig at Minglewood Hall, and I started there as the marketing guy, street team guy, and I turned into the box office manager, and I turned into the talent buyer then, because people kept dropping off who couldn't do the work, and I kept stepping in to fill their place. So you got to keep going. I mean, when I graduated college in Grand Rapids, Michigan, they said, what do you want to do when you grow up? And I said, I want to get paid to go to concerts. And that, everyone laughed, just like some of y'all just did. And I didn't know how I was going to do it, but I knew I could work hard. I had a really good work ethic to keep it going. And transferring down to Memphis then really opened up my eyes to what the music scene could be, what a city involved in music could be. And since then, I've now... Minglewood closed down during COVID. It has since reopened with a new management staff. But in that time, I transferred over to Mempho, and we started with like, hey, just book a couple club shows. You know, we do the music festival every year, but it was like, keep it growing. And last year, I think we booked like 70 club shows like around the region. And we've added now new festivals. We just did a big event at South by Southwest 2 weeks ago with a bunch of local bands. We had the Barquets, Classic, and Lucero. And then we had like Mark Rowe and Isabel Sebastian and a bunch of younger cats to try to really just put Memphis on the map in Austin. So it was called, Memphis meets Austin meets Memphis. And trying to get people to then come to Memphis. Like you can win tickets, you can win flights, come to these festivals, come see Memphis, and really just feel what Memphis has to offer, which is a ton. And it's ever growing. And I just love this place. It's awesome. And we love doing all these festivals and hope y'all can come out to a bunch of them. I see some of y'all with the flyer, so hit me up. We also have work available. A lot of volunteer work, a lot of different jobs you can start on the ground and really kind of build that to grow what you want to do.
So Made in Memphis Entertainment is founded by David Porter. And if you don't know who David Porter is, he's a legendary Hall of Fame songwriter. Are any of y'all familiar with Isaac Hayes, Stax Records? So within our company, he's very big on educating us on that whole era. And even if you're not a fan, it's important to know the history, because not only is it history, but we are like the new history that's going to be talked about years from now. So just being rooted in that and knowing how it all started, I think it will be a great development into your careers as well, whichever way you decide to go in the music industry. And that's all I wanted to say on that.
So me being an import, I just recently moved out here too. I agree. I was going to say, I wouldn't necessarily say that you should carry the city on your back, because I'm very honest when I speak to creatives, because creativity is almost spiritual. And you have a calling. That might not be how you're supposed to show up in the world. You get what I'm saying? That might not be your charge. Like the people that, like see Glow, I couldn't see Glow without Memphis. You know what I'm saying? Like this is her. You know what I mean? Like I couldn't separate it. Versus maybe another artist that I didn't even know was from Memphis. But it's okay because it fits them. I hope I'm making sense when I say that, right? But most importantly, you know how I said the first level that building block your foundation was being authentic? The next thing is educating yourself. So you may not have the calling, so to speak, to leave here and say, I'm from Memphis. You know, that might not be your thing. But very similar to New Orleans, people are just very talented. So I love this place because it just reminds me of home. But unfortunately, I just see so much talent, and some of the tools you need to get you out in front of people, you just don't have it. It's not that you don't want them, you just don't know you need them. You get what I'm saying? So my thing is education. And I feel like if you do take the time, everybody in here who is studying music and you are from Memphis, or if you're from another place and in this season in your life you are living in Memphis, it would behoove you to learn as much as you can about every entity of all the genres in this city. Because it's not just the soul stuff, okay? And you will be shocked when you Google, like, wait, what? That sample? Oh, and you just don't even know. You know what I'm saying? So I think that the that's how you carry it on your back. And to be honest, I really think if you educate yourself, you would want to. I think if you're called to do it and you're from this region of the world, you're going to eventually fuse it anyway. And like she said, it's in you. It's in you. You know what I'm saying? And you might not be from here, but again, I agree with him. That hustle, that let me focus hardcore on getting that music done, getting that event done, that's another thing I see with Memphians. When you lock in on music, you locked in. Like, I got to literally tap you on your shoulder like, let's do your paperwork, baby. Come here. Come on. I'm with Adaptive. That's through MIME as well. Like, let's get your paperwork, baby. Let's get you some bread here. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, I think all what all of us said is important, but educate yourself regardless, and I think that the city will shine through you.
Anyone can jump in. What are your hireables and your fireables, your non-negotiables? What would make you move on from a situation, a collaboration, a client, a team member, and or just a colleague? We can go. This is one of the questions the students ask, so we want to go in.
A hard client. Being a manager, I have to be able to click. We have to be on the same page, whether we like each other or not. Just being a manager and behind the scenes, I deal with a lot of people that may not like me, and I may not like them. But at the same, that's personal. That has nothing to do with this business that we have to keep on making happen. So you got to be able to click with your team, with your people. I mean, I've had situations where I've started managing and then I just had to stop because it was a lot of other things going on that was just unnecessary. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that's when I have to step back and say, anybody that wants to be a manager out here or be in the business side, I have to step back and say, okay, I like this child, but I'm sorry, I'm old. So I call everybody children. I have a 27-year-old, so he's still a child. But anyway, I sit back and I'm like, do I want to continue on putting myself in a situation that looks like it's going to be harder? Now, he may hit and make, he might have a million plays on a record, but is this going to be the right situation for me? Mm-hmm. And that's the part. Like, you have to be able to click and get it with the person, because if your team is messed up, then your career is going to be messed up. Mm-hmm. You know? Like, if you don't have a strong team and a strong building and a strong people behind you, you know, it's hard to put your team together, and that takes time. But in order for things to move correctly, you have to have a team. Because my job, I don't want to do... Boogie has more than one manager. He has two managers. I don't do that other manager's job. I don't do anything that he do. I don't want to do anything that he do. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't want to do anything that I do. So we click by I do my job and he do his. And Boogie does his job. And Boogie's assistant does her job. But we all have to collaborate together and make the job get done. Now, if I'm over here doing the assistant's job and the other manager's job, you know, ain't nothing getting done correctly. So you find your team, and, you know, that would be a turnoff for me, for constant chaos and constant things that I'm not clicking with.
Well, I would agree. And I think just having the management experience before in my career is the difference between being a manager and a babysitter. And usually it gets hard when you have to do more stuff. Like you said, that child is kind of like a thing. I'm not, you know what I mean? I'm not trying to be disrespectful, but sometimes people can be really, when you're unclear, which goes back to what's the first thing I say, a foundation, correct? If you know who you are and your authenticity, it's a lot easier to navigate as an artist in this space, right? So for me, my first thing would be if you're not teachable. That's a deal breaker for me. You know, you have to be teachable. And for me, it's if you're not already a student of life and you don't already just want to learn as much as you can be at a deficit in this type of space because music is ever changing. We had new rules in October and we have new ones in March. You get what I'm saying? And I heard you say coachable, and coachable, yes, but it's really more about being taught the skill of being able to stay in a state of always being coachable. You need both of them, actually, right? And that's how you get finesse and effervescence, and you can move into the space and you can kind of grow as the artist you want to be. The second one might be a little odd, but if you lack compassion. I had an experience with a colleague recently within the last few months, and something happened. And when something was asked of them, they were like, no. And it required compassion because life, right? Nah, deal breaker for me. Because what I know about life is as long as you keep on living, you don't know what's gonna happen. So you can set up a whole event, you can put your whole life on hold, you can set up a whole tour, and something happened and you can't go. You done planned it for 9 months. You gotta watch how you treat people. You understand what I'm saying? So for me, that is, I take that personally. Because I'm not a perfect person, but I'm a kind woman. And I try to consider people. I can't always accommodate you. But if you're not like that in this space, you can make a lot of enemies because it's very small. And I'm not talking about Memphis. I'm talking about music, the whole industry. It looks like it's everybody popping, but it's a very tiny industry. It's one phone call, and that's a wrap. You will be blackballed. You know what I'm saying? So again, that's why I circle back to authenticity, because for me, I'm a spiritual woman. Take what resonates. If it doesn't, it's okay. But I believe that God gave me my gifts. So even if somebody tried to blackball me or hate on me, I can still transcend that. But I also need to be careful about what I'm putting out there. You know what I'm saying? So yeah, that's my tool.
Kanisha asked, we've discussed the fireables. What would be something that would entice you to hire someone?
Being humble. Grounded and hungriness that would make me want to work with someone. And I mean, and you know, because literally I just turned down an offer to work for an artist who's got some stuff, but the humbleness wasn't there. It was, everything had to be so big and this and that. I'm like, but you don't have a song on the radio. You know, we need to get you. You got to start with the basics. You can't go straight to tour. You know, so that sort of thing, when someone is there for the whole ride and stays humble and teachable and, you know, hungry for it.
I like the word hungry because when you're hungry, just like we said earlier, you're going to put in the hard work. And with hard work, we love people that take initiative. So that's probably my word, just doing it without even having to be asked, not being afraid if it's going to work or not, just being okay with failure, learning from your mistakes, but just us seeing that you're taking that initiative, putting in that work, we love that. So, yeah.
I want to piggyback off of that. I think it is humility as well. I think it's all coupled, but it's let's say a situation happens with an artist, and let's say the driver can't show up, or you know something spills, or I like the artist that'll be like, no, I'll help. You know, they're not like, you know, like bougie, like better, like they can't. Pretty much the janitor and the president is the same person because they could switch places. Right? Yeah. So like that's always a thing for me because, and Angela will know, like I have worked with so many people that other people are like, I'm like, no, they got it. Cause that's like a part of the it factor. You know what I'm saying? The it factor is not just your talent. It's not just because you sound good. A lot of people sound good, but what can carry that? You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, y'all heard of, who does Benny and the Jets? I always forget his name. Elton John, right? He lost his falsetto. I don't know if y'all know that. And he was known for that. He's still the boy, though. He showed up in his career where people still rock with him because he is who he is, right? So just making sure you're just like a good human. Everybody not going to like you. You know, and this is something I say on every panel I go to. Listen, If you want everybody to like you, not just in music and life, you're going to get that's a bad look. Your desire should be to be a good person, because everybody is not going to like you on purpose. By design, they're not supposed to. You should not desire that. If you want everybody, that's something else you might have to work out on the inside. Now, I think in general, we want to be in good spaces with people, whether they like us or not, but I don't desire that. I have no desire for that. And I used to when I was younger because I didn't know any better. But I'm like, yeah, okay, hi, bye. I think having all of those little characteristics on the inside, because if you have the talent, you can be cultivated, right? It was a girl, we did a panel the other day, the girl got upset. Well, she didn't get upset, but we had to tell her, like, you know, she needed a vocal coach because it was a sync panel, so we were telling her, you know, she could use the songs. And I said, baby, you get a vocal coach because you can sing, not because you can't. The tools are there to tool. You see what I'm saying? Like, I just think sometimes people separate themselves from that and they take it so personally. And you should not. It is your God-given gift. Your goal is to be a good human and to use that gift in service of some kind. And with that, you'll be able to take care of yourself and your family and your friends and whatever y'all little things. Y'all can go do your yachts and whatever, you know. Some people might want to get at a church, whatever, because whatever you want to do. You know, you might want to do a spiritual journey. But you do all of that and you get there because just at a basic level, you take your creativity, you're just a good person. And then you go from there.
Yeah, and I would say on top of that, you really want to, I think I've said this earlier, but you really want to make sure you come in early, you leave late, and you're a sponge. Don't come in acting like you know every job that's in front of you, because you don't. I don't. I'm still learning every single day. We want people who want to come in and ask the questions, listen, and apply all that knowledge. Want people who are hungry, who are willing to do whatever job is put in front of them and not complain about it. I met a young lady who impressed me one time a couple months back. She actually just walked in, so I'm going to embarrass her. But I met her out for dinner with some of her friends. I thought she was really impressive. And we were looking for someone at our barbecue festival last year to really help out. And I called her. I was like, hey, I know you haven't done a lot of things in this business yet, but you have done some things. Are you willing to come work for us for a little while? And she's like, you know, how much work can you give me? And I was like, man, I could probably put you to work for a couple of weeks. And she's like, I will quit my job right now and come work for you if you'll guarantee me to the end of the month. I was like, no problem. And she came in early. She listened. She did everything put in front of her. A lot of stuff getting thrown at her from all different directions, but she didn't let it overwhelm her. And she would call me anytime she had questions. She would call our other bosses anytime she had questions. It's okay to not know, and it's really okay to ask questions to keep learning. So those are the type of people I like working for me.
Make some noise for that. That's what's up. Not just getting music information, but some life information for whatever you want to take your career path or career, whatever you want to take your own path into, your life path into. Let me re-ask the question from before we got into that, because I want to narrow it down a bit. What tools make your daily routine work? What tools, software, hardware, or people and things or places you rely on to be able to get your job done?
What tools?
Tools.
Okay. This right here. I do everything on this. In my computer, my laptop, Words, Excel.
That's your iPhone. For everyone listening at home,
and
your iPhone.
And then if we're on tour, I like to use, what is this app I use for the tour? It's really good. Master Tour. Yeah. I use Master Tour for the tours. And
what does Master Tour do?
So Master Tour, if you're going on a tour, it's a simple tool to have everybody on the same page as far as, like, you're all of the musicians, all of the back end, all of the front end, everybody within your organization can have updates, know timings. It does everything for a tour. Like, it gives you the theater, the time you need to be there. You put all that in, and everybody has it. So it's not, you know, you're not emailing 100 people at one time. Now they just pick up their phone and go to Master Tour. So.
Cool. I might have to download that just to get from South Parkway back up here.
Yeah, it's good for your daily schedule. My tools are obviously the phone and my Mac every day and a good team around me, but I like waking up every day early and, you know, kind of doing some yoga and stretching and getting my coffee and kind of getting my mind right before I even get into the office, you know, because you want to come in there ready to work. So that's a really important part to start your day. Make sure you're nourished. Make sure you're taking care of yourself, because you're not taking care of yourself, can't take care of anyone else.
Logan, I'm getting there. the taking care of yourself part, I'm still trying to figure that out, because sometimes I just feel like, and I'm just being honest, I feel like I have so much going on because, again, I'm in the industry on a business side, but I'm an artist too. So it's like when I'm getting off of work, I'm still, you know, at work. I'm locking in. So it's been a struggle for me trying to, I'm not going to even say find that balance, but just create some type of system that I can really stick with. But of course, all of the tools that they use, I live by my calendar now. Like, if it is not on my calendar, like, it's not going to happen. And that's just the stage of life that I am in. There's also this app called TickTick, if you're not familiar with it. That's a help. It lets you, it's kind of like your notes a little bit on your phone, but you can lay out all your tasks, set reminders and checks off. It even send you alerts when you haven't done it, like you forgot about this, pops up in red, like you got to do this. So that's something else that I use. And then, yeah, just having a great team that can be there to push or pick up any slack or just reminders and things like that. So, yeah.
So it changes by the season I'm in, I guess. So in this particular season, it's, every season it's always like praying and meditating. I do that first thing. I actually do that throughout the day as much as I can. But in terms of tools, same, phone, computer. But I also use Disco because I'm in a sync space. So is anybody familiar with Disco? No? Okay, you can also use Disco, kind of like Dropbox, but I use that. That's a really good tool for me. And when I meet artists, producers, you guys know what metadata is, right? Everybody know metadata? Right. So you can put all your metadata in there. You can upload your stems, your lyrics, all of that. And I need all of that before I shop it to a network. So that's like a lifesaver for me. I have the app on my phone. I use it on the computer. And they keep upgrading it. It's really good. And now there's a new tool that at the end of each year, it'll show you everybody, like who, like how many times something was heard, played, downloaded. It's really good. They used to have like a free version. I think you might have to pay like $10 a month or something for it now, but it's really good. And same calendar, but the Google Calendar. You know, the Google Calendar is really, I've been using that a lot. I have to. I think it's one other one that my notes. I have an iPhone. I'm sure you may have it on a Droid, too. I don't know if it's an app or something, but I have over 4,000 notes on my phone. So, you know, just some of them have like 2 or 3 words, but it's just so that I don't forget. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, those are the tools I use.
I'm going to ask this this last question, and we're going to break for some pizza. And y'all be thinking of good ways to connect while we're on this little break. But since we're speaking with the student community and a young artist community and also a diverse group of skills, I see some cameras popping, some people helping with recording. They even helping me stay on top of mine. I know Megan might come up here and smack me on the back of my neck if I don't hurry up and get to the next segment. But at what point should you stop accepting gigs for exposure and start insisting on a particular rate? Or some got to get to that bag in some kind of way. This might be an easy question for some, but I definitely want to make sure we hit this because the students wanted to know.
I did a lot of work for free when I started. And I was talking to my boss earlier, and he said, you can't put a price on experience. So keep that in mind, but it doesn't mean you should do everything for free. But if you see something that you really like and you need to get your foot in the door, don't worry. I mean, go volunteer, go do it, go try to get some experience with that person, because if you put in the work and the person sees you putting in the work, they're going to want to call you next time they need someone to work. There's not really a time frame. Your time is valuable. You want to, you know, obviously keep a job that makes you money and helps you get by. But, you know, at night, go out and grind and do something. Go, like, work a show. Go work a festival. Go work with an artist. Go do something that gets you that experience, because the more you do those things, the more knowledge you have, the more people you're going to meet, the more you can continue to snowball. That's how I built my whole entire career.
Oversimplification here, but you just know your gut. You're going to get tired of not getting bread. You're going to get tired of that. And then at that point, your discernment needs to kick in. And then even when you're getting money, there'll be some things that come where you're consistently getting paid. And some things, the money is not worth it. Getting the room and the experience and taking the trip or getting the opportunity, getting the tour, getting the concert bid, whatever. Again, this is this goal. Again, y'all see what I'm doing here? I keep taking you back to that foundation. When you are authentic and you know you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, all that stuff gonna start clicking. Like, man, I need some. I'm not doing this again. What? You know what I'm saying? Because sometimes that's why, and she'll tell you, anytime I do anything, I try to have food, drinks, you know, connections, just anything, because I know we, all of us on here, I'm sure, grind just for nothing many times. And sometimes I do things, you know, even now, like, okay, I'll do it. You know, because it's still acts of service involved if you feel like it's a thing that you're supposed to be doing. But ultimately, I think you know. And we kind of said this, but let me drop this little piece in here too. Keep good people around you. Because sometimes it might be that bestie or the person who's like not in the industry who could be like, I hear you, but you might have to charge them this time. You know what I'm saying? Because they just like you. They love you. They're not tripping. They're like, you need to tweak this. Like, why do you keep doing this like this? And because they just either used to doing it that way or they just don't understand that you do have to shift. You cannot rely on the other person to know to pay you. They should know that in hiring you or setting up the opportunity, but it's your job as the individual to know your worth. You have to be the one to do that. And always remember, you can negotiate these things too. Somebody could give you a number and you can say, okay, well, I can maybe do this. And he probably knows about this too. When you get people to come in and help, sometimes it's like, all right, listen, I'll get you some food on this day. I could probably slide you about $50 this day. And then, you know, in the next one, when the deal is $50K, they might get $5,000. Because when everybody else was looking for this and they're doing mediocre work, that other person just was like, yo, I'm grinding, I'm doing it. And you got to tap them and be like, here you go, or here's a bonus, right? So, again, that just goes back to your gut. You just got to trust your gut on that.
For other genres, like as far as for the hip-hop genre, when you start getting booked outside of Memphis, your hometown, that's, you should be charging, you know. Memphis, we don't have a lot of places where the hip-hop community can go and actually perform, like on a weekly basis, like at a B.B. King's where they have the weekly bands and all that. We don't, the community here, we don't have that. So it's, you know, but certain things you do want to charge for, and then certain things you don't. Like, you just got to use your discernment on what to charge for. And I'm speaking right now straight to the hip-hop community, because that, it's either you don't get paid when you first get starting out, or you paying to get on somebody's show, or you don't get paid, or you getting paid a lot. And there's no middle section to the situation. So for the hip-hop people, get your fan base out there. When you start getting booked in Mississippi, Arkansas, the tri-state area, the we call it the Chitlin Circuit, you start charging. That's when you start charging your real fees.
And don't bend on your price. I mean, yes, negotiating like she spoke of, but when I say bending, like, I'm meaning as far as, like, just because someone is like, no, that doesn't mean you won't get the yes. That just may not be the right opportunity for you or the right person. So make sure you don't bend, stick to it.
Please give a round of applause to our panel. Thank y'all so much for being with us.
If you're just tuning in, welcome to the Meeting in the Middle 2025. Presented by WYXR 91.7 FM and recorded live at the University of Memphis. I'm your host, Quincy Macon, WYXR intern, U of M student, and proud member of the next generation of Memphis music professionals. This program is all about connection, giving students and emerging creatives like me the chance to learn directly from the people who are already doing the work in music, media, and the arts. We just heard a great conversation about building a music career in Memphis, with stories and insight from professionals who started local and grown their impact far beyond city limits. Now we shift our focus to something just as important, what it means to treat your creativity like a business, and how education and entrepreneurship play a role in making your talent sustainable over time. This next panel is called The Role of Education and Music Entrepreneurship. WYXR's Jared J.B. Boyd returns to moderate a conversation with Tangela, Rhea the Writer, and Red on the Beat, three dynamic creatives who have carved out their own unique lanes, blending artistry with business savvy and deep understanding of the Memphis community. Meeting in the Middle was made possible with support from Arts Memphis, Tennessee Arts Commission, Blue Time Records, and the University of Memphis. Let's dive back in.
Did y'all enjoy that first one? Fantastic. Well, we got more incredible knowledge headed back your direction. Again, my name is Jared J.B. Boyd. I don't think that I actually properly introduced myself. I'm bad about that, just assuming folk know just because I put the event together. I'm program manager at WYXR 91.7 FM. I also want to thank again Blue Time Records, Arts Memphis, Tennessee Arts Commission, and the University of Memphis for their support of this event. And I would love if our new panel would introduce themselves before we get underway.
What's going on, everybody? I go by Red on the Beat, music producer, work with pretty much everybody from the city. Been a part of the Grammy Academy since 2019 as a voter member, so I'm able to put artists up for nominations, attend the Grammys and stuff like that. It's cool. I don't know, that's pretty much it.
Hey, everybody. My name is Tangela. I am an artist, producer, and I work by day as a live sound engineer. I recently just did my first arena tour ever. It was for the Janae Aiko Magic Hour Tour, and I worked for Kiana Lede and Umi for it. Yeah, happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Hi, everybody. My name is Real the Writer, songwriter, A&R. I also do some creative consulting. Memphis native. Got my start in the industry working for Made in Memphis for their distribution company. Actually, before that, started off at a writing camp, unexpectedly, where I met Tangela and a couple other dope writers and producers. And yeah, that's me. Happy to be here as well.
I'll jump right into it. What level of education, formal education, did you complete, and what role does education play in your career?
Well, I'll go first. I went all the way to college. I went to Jackson State. I did marching band since middle school. So, I mean, I'm going to tell you like this. I went to school and majored in music, but I kind of was ahead of the whole thing and not even noticing I was. And by the grace of God, I became Red on the Beat while I was in school. Left it alone, focused. I would say understand music theory, understand it. Honestly, like they said earlier, it's in us, because I didn't know I was so far ahead of the people that were in my class until I actually got around people that really wanted to do this, and I realized I shouldn't have majored in it. But it depending on what type of field you're going in this music industry, you know, you may want to be an attorney or a music lawyer, so sometimes school is important. I say for the creatives, create and see if school is for you as well. So I wouldn't say knock it out the window, but that's my answer.
I went to Berklee College of Music. I graduated in 2019. My major was professional music with a concentration in electronic production and design, and my minor was in acoustics and music technology. I feel like education played a part in the sense that, like, it taught me how to learn. Like, I always say I learned so much more about myself going to music school than I learned about anything else. Like, you're going to have to be a student forever. So while you're in school, even if you end up not getting a job in your major, we all hope that you do. But for a lot of us, sometimes that doesn't happen. But you will have the tools necessary, if you take it seriously enough, to be a student and learn the things that you need to. Because, some of y'all in here may very well be like a Red on the Beat and be completely ahead. And some of you can be completely behind, but you could always catch up to that. Because I imagine he's a master student, and that's why he was ahead, you know. So I feel like education is the pinnacle of this industry. You cannot walk. There's no excuse to be green. We got the internet, honey, ChatGPT, so many ways to learn things, so many ways to fill your head with the knowledge that you need to really prosper in this industry. So I think education is important whether you're in school or not.
So I'm the rebellious one out of us, I guess, because I started college. So I went to college. I graduated from high school in 08, White Station High School, home of the Spartans. Hey, there we go. I got one. Yes. So, I got another Spartan here.
Yeah,
I'm
we
sorry,
went to high
man.
School together. Yeah, yeah. Yes.
How could I forget? But no, I had some college, and then in college, I ended up meeting this producer by the name of Teray Love. Teray is, I'm sure you all have heard his work. If you've heard a lot of Jay Howell's music, he produces for Jay Howell. But I met Teray. We shared the same birthday, just a year apart. He's a year older. He was a producer, and he was one of the first producers that connected with me and wasn't saying, I charged $500 for a beat. He was just like, yo, I think you're probably dope. I'm going to send you some stuff. Just write to it. He would send me tracks. I would write to him. We would do the demos. We would try to find singers to do the demos because I'm not a singer. and so that was basically it. But I've always said I want to continue my education. I will share this with you guys. Back before I left college, my goal was to eventually transfer and go to Middle Tennessee State because I was a dork and I fell in love with their whole curriculum as far as like music business and songwriting. But my other education that I've obtained, I watch a lot of podcasts with people who are legends in the industry. So that's where I get a lot of my education from.
Computer, what up, man? I see you. Oh, my God. A lot of people, a lot of the students rather had questions about mentorship. And I imagine that before we leave it tonight, some of them might ask some of our panelists to be mentors. How do you find a good mentor, and who are some of your mentors when you think of that?
How do you find a good mentor? I kind of believe that sometimes a good mentor finds you, the right person finds you and mentors you. When I started at Made in Memphis, right, I think the same time I started, like before or after I started, we had Delonte Murphy join the team. Delonte Murphy, he's an A&R, he's a manager, he manages Eli Derby, managed Trey Songz like early on in his career. He was someone who really saw me and championed for me and saw my dedication, he saw my hunger. So I think really sometimes a good mentor will just find you and gravitate towards you.
I completely agree with what Real is saying. Like when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. At times, I've definitely had moments like that, but I also come from a musical family, and so there was always that pressure. Well, I won't say pressure. It was just my mother growing up just kind of seeded into the things she saw that I naturally gravitated towards, and I happened to have a cousin who managed Janelle Monáe, and my great auntie was a Ray Lett, and her husband was a manager, and so like I kind of had mentors in my family. You know what I mean? And that really helped me along the way. And it does apply another level of pressure when something is generationally expected of you. You know what I mean? And then another mentor came through, my cousin, Amanda Davis. My cousin is South Memphis Jeffrey Coran, who is, from my understanding, some of you guys is a professor. But I also think that I want to say, I find it really important to make sure that when you're looking for mentorship, you're not looking for someone to make up for the lack of work that you want to do for yourself. So no, it does not matter how many connections anybody has. If you are lazy and if you are unkind, if you can't, I don't know, it doesn't matter. Nobody can connect you with anybody, but you have to maintain that relationship. And oftentimes what maintains that relationship is work ethic, is kindness, is, of course, talent. But also, people want to see that, like, you willing to bang their door down to get what it is that they know. You know what I mean? And, I'm really grateful. Shout out to Amanda Davis. She would not have pitched me for that arena tour had I not shown her that I had the capacity to handle the workload that working at that level would take. And so, cool. Want a mentor. But you got to first be a heck of a student. And be teaching yourself, because a lot of people, they're not just about to pour information into your brain.
I guess I'll speak on it. For me, my backstory, my dad was a member of the Barclays. He played lead guitar. So I grew up around a lot of old souls. So even Anna, like, her grandfather, Willie Mitchell, I was at their studios growing up. So you never really know who's watching and who's going to pick up on you and be like, man, I remember you when you was a little kid. But for me, I think I kind of separated myself to become Red on the Beat. And Shawty Red found me, and he's the guy behind Young Jeezy. And we found each other just, everybody said I looked like him. And then he just picked me up as a little brother. And it was like, but he realized how good I was at production. And so it was like, to actually see somebody on top of the production world and kind of looking at it, even though I haven't even met him, but we talked every day. You know what I'm saying? So it was like, you never really know who gonna find you, who gonna grab you or just give you that boost, because even though my dad was a member of the Barcades and played with some of everybody, I looked up to him to a certain extent because he's a live performer. I'm just behind the scenes creating all the time. So it was so much I could learn from him to where I had to go and learn for myself. But that's pretty much it. Like, if you're working, they watching, you know, and somebody will come and, you know, hey, let me help you with this, or let's link, let's do this, and you never really know who's going to take, put you under their wing.
Outside of a traditional education, what are some of the institutions that taught you the most, and what are some of those most important lessons that you learned? It could be a clique that you got into. It could be a gig that you worked regularly. It could be something that you saw in somebody else that spoke to you. But the school of hard knocks, the things that you don't pay tuition for, what are some of those institutions and what are some of those lessons learned?
I'm going to just say life. Just going outside. It could be as simple as cutting on the radio or looking. When social media came out, it was so much to look at and take in. And MySpace came out, and you can – it came down to just simple stuff. I wouldn't say – even though I went to college for a minute, it was like – like I said, I knew so much before then, just going outside or pulling up and asking questions, you know what I'm saying? That's kind of one of the biggest things. A lot of people scared to open their mouth and speak for themselves, but outside of the books and in the classroom, that's when it all boils down. You know, if you can speak for yourself and make a connection and just learn, sit and absorb, like this, for me, that's kind of the outside institution. But you do have, of course, programs and stuff like that, but you won't know about them if you're not asking questions, you know.
I feel like early in my life, I mean, I went to the Stax Music Academy from like fifth grade to the 12th grade. And I'm really fortunate to have been able to learn about Memphis music. I'm really fortunate to have been able to be educated at Stax Records and walk that ground and like stand in the museum a million times. Like when you're there from fifth grade to like graduating high school, you cannot help. And they held us to a standard because they knew it was important at an early age for us to understand that we're ambassadors for this city, whether we want to be or not. Like if you want to be a Memphis artist and you want to make it big, then you, I'm a person. I guess I'm just an all or nothing kind of person. I'm going to carry the city on my back regardless, you know, like because this city nurtured me. And so I should give a huge shout out to the Stax Music Academy and the Soulsville Charter School for my early education on like what significance, Memphis music has played to the overall industry. I mean, you can't cut on the radio today and not hear a Memphis artist or a Memphis producer. You know what I mean? Like, we still that guy, you know. We are definitely him and her in the industry, and I think it's not going to change.
I think I have to piggyback on what Rhea said, the school of life. And to add to that, I want to add and say, excuse me, don't be afraid to make mistakes. That's part of life. I tell people all the time, everything happens for a reason, good, bad, indifferent, ugly. It all happens for a reason. I think we have to be mature enough to take some accountability and pull mistakes from everything. Pull lessons from every experience. Pull lessons from the good experiences. Pull lessons from the bad experiences. Pull lessons from the indifferent experiences. Because everything, there's some kind of lesson that you can learn from it.
What do you look for in a collaborator, and how do you? What standard do you hold yourself to make sure that you're a good collaborator?
What I personally look for in a good collaborator is someone who exhibits something I had to learn myself, and that was how to be open to change, someone who knows how to identify their strengths, who also knows how to identify their weaknesses. Like one of the things, like when I'm in a room with other songwriters, I know how to identify when the writer is stronger than me in a certain area. I know how to identify when I might be stronger in a certain area. I know how to take myself out of the picture completely and say, hey, I think this other person will be better for it because they can do the job. So basically just someone who, I think it was said earlier, someone who's teachable and coachable.
I think for me, I've noticed you can tell when in a session when people are in service of the music or in service of themselves. I think either at that songwriting camp or at another songwriting camp, he upset me in a session, but it was intentional because of the nature of the song that we were writing. And so if you're a person who has the capacity, has that malleability of mind to see, okay, I am not accessing the necessary emotion naturally because I'm such a good mood to be in the studio. I am not accessing the necessary emotion to convey this song the way he wrote it. And so if in the moment he has to upset me a little bit and push a little bit harder, I don't think y'all understand how, and I don't know about anybody else here, but I'm 5 feet tall, but my ego is 20 feet tall sometimes. And so it can take a bit. And I had to walk away. I had to leave. I had to walk out of the session to get my mind together. But in me getting my mind together, that's what I was telling myself. We're in service of the song. This ain't in service of me or my mood. People going to have to listen to this and feel the emotion that we intend to convey with the words and stuff. So I really love when I'm able to be in spaces with people who are, one, willing to take risks like that, but also having that malleability of mind to manage your own emotions and not make it my problem. Because I done told you don't like something, I don't like something, or I done told you that, oh, you're not singing it. Like, if the song wouldn't have been what it was had he not pissed me off. I'm just saying, it wouldn't have. Like, get over yourself.
and just to reverse that back, something I had to also learn in it is to also know when to push and when not to push. Me personally, anyone who's ever been in a session with me, I have a big personality. I'm a gentle giant, but if you're into the stars and the moons, I'm a Virgo. And so when you understand, when you think about famous Virgos, you think about Michael Jackson, Kobe, Taraji, Beyonce, The Dream. And so you think of those people, I'm like mentally kind of, I'm on the same wavelength. I'm not on their level, I'm not saying that, but mentally I'm on the same wavelength. So a lot of times, some people can sometimes take the pushing and the big personality too much. So I also had to learn in that situation when to pull back and when not to go over the limit.
I guess I speak from a producer standpoint. Honestly, I like somebody that has the right approach. I'm not really going to just work with anybody, and it's not because of who I've worked with. It doesn't really matter what your bank coming like. If I got to pull these sounds and this creativity and this song out of your head and make it something for everybody else, your fans or whatever, I have to really lock in with you and understand what you got going on. It's like the ego is at the door. I forget who I've worked with. You forget what you've done. Like we start from scratch. Everything is... It's just the approach. So even if the approach is off, is I don't know, because I'm to myself. But when I produce, you know, it's a different energy. I'm big on energy, so it's not about money. You know what I'm saying? It has to be correct, though. You see what I'm saying? But if you coming in with the ego and you feel like just because you got the bag and stuff and it go your way, this record is not going to move the way you want it to move. Just somebody to listen to, even working with other producers, like, hey, man, it might be too busy or this might be too much, and them understand where you're coming from, and the collaboration is good. Like, it always pays off. But I'm just big on energy and approach, bro. Like, that's pretty much my answer for it.
Yeah, you can clap it up for sure. There's a lot of wisdom up here. I've never been, and so I'm curious what goes on at these songwriting camps. I mean, I see the people walking through with their guitars and their headphones, and I see two or three of them be like, oh, they do music. Oh, they look like one of them songwriting camps finna go down. So how do those get set up? How do you get invited, and what goes on in there? Because like y'all had a tense moment. I don't know if that was at the beginning of it, or do we get together, eat Piccadilly first? I mean, how do we get into it? As you know, it sounds like it probably is a lot of awkwardness to get through first before you get to the good stuff. I don't know. I'm just thinking of other group activities I've been in. I'm not sure.
Well, I speak on the type of camp that we did, and I'm sure she's probably done other camps outside of the type that we did. So the type of camp that we did was a sync camp. And so if you've ever written for sync before, then you understand writing for sync is not like you're going in there to write for Rihanna or you're going to write for Victoria Monet. You have a brief, and that brief details everything about that song, the working titles that might want you to do, the theme of the song, the tempo of the song, the feel of it. It may be, they may even be specific and tell you this song is going to be for this scene where the daughter is dying of cancer and this, that, and the third, and all that kind of stuff. So it's very detailed like that. And so you're writing for that brief. It can be easy, it can be tricky. I think, and I hate to say this, but I think thinking back to the camp we did, I think our team, we were on two different teams together. I think our two teams and another team, I think there were maybe like four or five teams total, but our two teams and one other team were like the only three teams that kind of nailed it or whatever. And even though we nailed it, we still had to go back in. I think one of our songs, they kind of just scrapped and was like, yeah, nice, but not yet. And another couple of songs that had us go back in and tweak the lyrics and, you know, change some of the arrangements and stuff around.
So who organizes it? Because I think I saw two people just walk in that organized songwriting camps. How do these songwriting camps come to be? Is that a special phone down. You got to answer, or Charles and McKenzie walking in?
They the one.
Yeah, they heard. They heard.
Honestly, when I've done Crosstown Syncs writing camps, it's been based on like an email. If I'm an artist that they have in their catalog that they're pitching music for, then I'll receive an email for the songwriting camps. If not, I feel like sometimes they... No, more than likely you have to be an artist who has music in their catalog. And please, y'all, jump in if at any point that is wrong. Mackenzie's my manager. Give it up for Mackenzie.
Managing ego, because that was something that y'all spoke about. How does it show up in your daily creative lives? How do you check yourselves and how do you check others? Or is that even your space?
I go, the ego thing, man, it's, I think it's different because a lot of people, they'll see you on the internet first. Mm-hmm. And then they may feel like, oh, let me go see who he's worked for. And it might be intimidating, or it's like they may come a different way. I think certain people that got over a certain amount of followers, which I never care, they never really, they don't pay my bills. I feel like they'll come in a different type of, you know, energy. And I told you I'm about approach. So it's like, I don't care what you've done, what you got going. It's like, if you want to work, like, we can do that. And it's this is how I live. Like, this is what pays my bills. So it's a different chick. I got to check you, because it's like, if I let you feel this way, just us talking or messaging or phone call, when we get in that studio to create, it's going to be the same thing. And it's like, when people get my energy, like, oh, nah, bro, he's serious. Like, or they may feel a certain way about me because I'm quiet until it's time to work. This is my job, so I gotta check you. Like, if I know Bill's coming up, I'm finna move. Like, Bill's coming up, I'm not finna sit and be your friend. Like, let's work. You know, if whatever we create becomes a blessing to us all, you know what I'm saying? Like, let's continue to do it. But at first, this is my job. You know what I'm saying? Like, everybody feel like once you become a friend or you become real close, that this, you get the discount, and you like, this is business. And a lot of people don't get that. And a lot of people feel like, oh, I got a million. Are we going to blow up? Are we gonna... I'm like, look, bro, I've been getting promised stuff since I was a little kid. Like,
come on.
They don't move me. You know what I'm saying? So that's how you check them.
I think as an artist, when I'm in sessions, I think I do come with a substantial amount of ego, but I think that the magnitude of it is also like congruent with the magnitude of my willingness to concede at any point. And I think that working live sound has helped me with that. Like, I'm a monitor engineer. My whole purpose is to serve the artist and make sure that whoever they are, they get the best performance possible. And so I think that it's been a blessing to have that day job that is me being forced to kind of take that hat off, that artist hat. And if I'm writing for an artist, my songwriting cap is on. I have to think of it as hats. But when I'm an artist, specifically, I want to speak to the women folk in the audience. Sometimes, you know, early on, I struggled to speak up for myself and stuff like that, and I would allow other people's egos or their desires or expectations for what they wanted my voice to do at any given moment, what they wanted, even as a producer, what they wanted the track to sound like, what they, and at times it can be difficult when in the presence of men or, like, larger personalities. At times, it was difficult for me to, like, stand up for myself, but I've since got a little rah-rah about me. And I'm able to, like, really speak up because people, you teach people how to treat you. And so if people think that they could run over you in a session or take over something, like you on the computer and they're just knocking you out the way or something, it's like, what are you doing? And sometimes you do have to come to them as a woman and say, look here, I too am an integral part of this creative process. And if you keep treating me like I'm giving 25% of effort, then I'm going to have to give you zero and leave. And I've definitely had to do that in certain sessions because people will surprise you. Where there are human beings, there's room for error. And people will have you messed up sometimes. And you have to know when to get up, when you're not being respected. And so I've been doing a lot of that lately. And I would recommend it.
I think personally, one of the ways I check my own ego is I always keep in mind that there's someone else in this room who has a strength that's not your strength, and you should try to learn from that. Speaking on as far as what she said about being willing to concede or how long I wait before I concede, I'm just personally at a space now where if I'm in a session or whether it's a writing session or any kind of creative session, if I'm giving an opinion about something, I'll go back and forth a little bit, and then after a while, I'm just kind of like, okay, because I just like peace, and I always think to myself, this ain't gonna be the first. This ain't the first or the last song I'm ever write. That part. So, calm down and take a chill pill.
Everyone up on this panel, and even the panel before, is a multi-hyphenate. How do you manage? Tangela, you touched on this a little bit. How do you manage making sure that one stream of your business doesn't hurt another, so that they flow? And that they are all serving your progression.
You know, the advice that I was given was to address things as seasons. So if my day job is live sound, I'm doing that all the time. But when I'm listening to the artists that I'm working for, I pull inspiration from them. And oftentimes, especially if I'm having a good show, it's nothing for me to go to the studio and stay there till 3 a.m. You know what I mean? Now, with other things that I do, like painting and stuff, I approach them in a more seasonal way. But when it comes to doing my job and then having to go to the studio, going to the studio recharges me. And I don't know if that's how it works with anybody else, but when I'm making music, like, I could be dirt tired coming from work and still go to the studio and leave at, like, 2-3 a.m, and I'm up the rest of the night because the song was just that good. And so it's not a balance, at least now, that I've really had to think too much about. Now, I think that once touring season picks back up, then y'all can hit me up on Instagram and ask me, so how's that balance going, you know? And I'll answer you. But right now, while I have enough time, a little more time, and I'm in Memphis and stuff, like, I go to work and I go to the studio because that's what my life has to be in order for me to make sure that both things are being fed and nurtured. Like, I refuse to let any plates drop in that area. So if I got to lose a little sleep, you know, maybe not eat dinner tonight, that's just me. You know, I'm willing to put my last towards, like, what I'm doing. And so I don't want to let anything slip. It's about being, like, even being a rapper and a singer. It's like, well, I'm going to sing and rap on all these songs, so I'm going to do both. You know what I mean? Like, it's a no-brainer if it's what you want.
I forgot to mention that outside of production, I help artists collect royalties. I help artists. I like to teach them, you know what I'm saying, about royalties and learning how to get 12 to 20-something chicks other than the 4 that you get quarterly. So I have an artist, Fresco Trey, and outside of his production, I help him with pretty much everything. And as far as, like, having a lot of stuff on the plate, I do help, like I said, I do help other artists, but the production, I make time for. Like, I find myself maybe making a beat a week, maybe. But sometimes I might just sit and lock out. Somebody got a project coming up, or album, or if I got to go somewhere, fly somewhere, and we do 12 hours. Like, I know how to cut everything off, and, like, you just lose sleep. Sometimes you lose sleep. Sometimes you stay up. It's, I don't know, it's I think once you do it for so long, it's second nature. Like, you don't really notice it, that you blocking everything out, because I gotta be a brother, I gotta be a son, a uncle, and still be Red on the beat. You know what I'm saying? And my real name is Aramis, so I still gotta be him too as well. So it's like, you don't really it's not really cut off sometimes, but it's just something that you'll learn the deeper you go into it.
I think an important thing is knowing when to not wear so many hats. So I have an artist that I write for and I manage. His name is Chris O. So the beginning of our relationship was artist-songwriter. And then as we developed more, became closer, it turned into artist-songwriter/manager. And then we took a break. Not a bad break, but we took a break. Once we got back in the studio and started back, it was artist and I was songwriter. I was manager. I was creative director. Creative consultant, A&R. I was doing so much. And so after we did our first project together, I had to take a moment and say, okay, what other people do I trust in other areas where I can step back and let them come in the room? I can't write all the songs and find all the producers and type all the lyrics out and upload all the songs on the streaming platforms and get all the metadata right? So, you know, what other areas can I pick in other people? So I made the self-conscious decision to say, hey, the next time we get back in the studio, I want to call in a couple other songwriters who probably can give him something different than what I can give him, or who can take on that role better than me while I focus on something else.
I think I want to clap it up for this panel right now. And thank y'all for coming. I know that we had a truncated pizza networking time for the last panel, so I really appreciate y'all. And if we can just kick it and mingle for a little bit while I break down the room, and I ain't had me no pizza yet, so I want me a little pizza. We all family, right? So respect their time. If they want to head out the door, then, you know, we'll find another way to connect. But please come, congratulate them, thank them, and get to know each other as well. And thank y'all for coming for Meeting in the Middle. Oh, and one more thing. Thank y'all. WYXR, thanks y'all. And we got a survey that you can fill out. Please do, so that we can know how we can make this a bigger and better event. Thank you to Blue Tom Records. Thank you to the University of Memphis, to the Scheidt Family Performing Arts Center, the School of Music Business. Thank y'all so much. Thanks for coming to Meeting in the Middle. We appreciate y'all. Much love.
Thanks for joining us for Meeting in the Middle 2025. Whether you're a student, an artist, or just someone passionate about Memphis music, we hope these conversations gave you something to think about, and maybe even a new path to follow. Meeting in the Middle was made possible with support from Arts Memphis, the Tennessee Arts Commission, Blue Tom Records, and the University of Memphis.